We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to Friday here on Fantasy Sports Today. I'm Craig Mish along with Davis Maddock. We've got some fantasy football to discuss here on the show. Our team previews continue here today as we look at every team in the NFL. If you missed our Atlanta Falcons preview yesterday, you can catch it on demand over on sportsgrid.com. But today our focus is on the Arizona Cardinals, a very upstart team for fantasy and reality as well. We'll hit that soon. But Davis, naturally, we got our first NFL preseason game last night, a game that really wasn't all that scintillating. We saw some decent things from some Raiders backups. The game did go over that total of 30 late in that one. But it was just great to have a preseason game in the books. And then come early next week, we're going to have a lot more, that's for sure.
Yeah, we are going to have a ton. And I mean, you know, to be fair, there was a couple fantasy football storylines that played out last night. Pretty much the one that captivated most people's attention was that Josh Jacobs was, for some reason, playing in the Hall of Fame game. Zamir White was still playing into the third quarter. And, you know, you can have different opinions about that stuff. The first one would be, why is, like, running backs never play in the preseason? Why is Josh Jacobs playing? And then the other one was McDaniels had kind of told people he really wanted to win this game. And that, you know, he was a little bit more comfortable playing guys who were going to have a role in the regular season. So kind of an eye of the beholder there.
Yep, I think that's definitely the case. Let's get to our headlines here on the show as we close out the week, but start our program here on this Friday. The Raiders, they defeat the Jaguars 27-11. That was the final score last night, in case you missed it in the Hall of Fame game. How about the Angels? They hit 7 home runs last night and lose to the Oakland Athletics. How does that even happen? Shohei Ohtani, I know, hit a couple. Mets win game 1 of a 5-game series versus the Atlanta Braves. This could determine the division winner. We will see. And Juan Soto and Josh Bell each record 2 hits in a loss to the Rockies. And in case people missed it a couple nights ago, Brandon Drury made his debut with the Padres, Davis, and he hit a grand slam, almost hit another home run yesterday. Look, Padres are going to be very formidable, it looks like, here down the stretch. We'll just have to see how they go toe-to-toe with the Dodgers, who, by the way, lost Clayton Kershaw again yesterday.
I saw, and that really is not good for the Dodgers, because Clayton Kershaw, a healthy Clayton Kershaw, is their best starting pitcher right now. They have lots of guys who are good twos, good threes, you know, guys who can Gonsolin and Mitch White and Julio Urias, like guys who are fine, but Kershaw is their guy who can take it to the next level, who can take the ball in a playoff game, you know, an elimination game, and go 7 clean innings and not have you sweat the entire time. Kershaw, you know, I mean, we were talking about in the offseason, is he going to come back and be a Dodger? You know, where is he going to play? He was dealing with injuries in the offseason, came back, got pulled in the middle of that, of that no-hitter at, I believe, 84 pitches, because they were trying to monitor him and keep him healthy. So this is a big deal. And the Dodgers are still going to win the division. But if he is not able to be, you know, 75% Clayton Kershaw, I think, is a great postseason starting pitcher. But if they don't have him available at all in the postseason, might be a very good bet by the Padres to acquire Josh Bell and Juan Soto.
Yeah, and look, Walker Buehler obviously not healthy either, and I'm guessing the hope with Kershaw is, Davis, you know, let's shut him down all of August, you know, and then bring him back in September and just get him ready for the postseason. The Dodgers are gonna make it. It's just a matter of how far they go, for sure, in that one. We didn't hit on Jacksonville at all. Is there any takeaway at all last night from that performance? I know you watched a lot closer than I did. You know, I may have watched 3 total minutes of this game last night.
Yeah, I mean their number one pick, Trevon Walker, he looked really good on the edge, but they were not that, you know, they were not playing anyone who is going to be involved in the offense. Etienne didn't play, James Robinson didn't play, none of their top five wide receivers played. It was Jake Luton and Kyle Slaughter. I mean, Trevor Lawrence looked handsome on the sideline. That's about all I got for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Didn't think there were any massive takeaways there. Now, the Hall of Fame game generally doesn't have a ton of you know, fantasy football ramifications, but week one will. You know, a lot of these teams are going to actually you know, have the first team offense out there, and you learn a ton based on who is playing where. Like, if Tyquan Thornton, you know, just pulling a name out of a hat, if he's playing in the
Right.
third quarter for the Patriots, you know, that, well, that's definitely going to be a warning sign. So there are always fantasy nuggets to glean from the preseason.
Yeah, no, I think so. And that's kind of the fun part about doing this is getting to watch some of the preseason and then make some determinations based on just playing time and performance. You're right, as you've talked about it, with the ones and the twos and the threes. I mean, that's sort of an important deal for sure. But the important part for us here on the show today is we continue our season previews in fantasy football. So we do one team per day, and we spend about 20 to 25 minutes on each team going through the average draft position of every team. And Davis, today is going to be Arizona. So we go yesterday from a team that may have two or three guys drafted to today, looking forward to discussing the Cardinals with you, which they definitely have players aplenty to consider.
They do, definitely. And I mean, they're probably one of the more interesting teams because you could definitely see Cliff getting fired this season. He actually just had a quote yesterday. Kyler Murray is going to call the plays for the Arizona Cardinals in their first preseason game. And Cliff was basically like, "You don't like the way I do it? You see how hard it is." Like, that was basically his quote to the media about Kyler calling the plays. So does not seem like the happiest of marriages there.
All right. Well, we'll go over the average draft position in the NFFC coming up next. And Davis and I will weigh in as to whether or not we like any of these players going into your fantasy football draft, which is just a few weeks away. Our preview of the Arizona Cardinals is next, right here on Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. Our 2022 fantasy football season previews continue as today, Davis and I are going to take a look at the Arizona Cardinals to review the season that they had last year. Got off to a tremendous start. In fact, we're starting to jump in terms of favorites to win the Super Bowl. That's how well they played in the months of September and even into October. And then things sort of fell apart, both in fantasy and reality. Davis, naturally, their best player, probably we would agree, is DeAndre Hopkins. He's going to have a suspension to start his season. And the big surprise performer from the 2021 NFL fantasy season, without a doubt, was James Conner. Naturally, the Cardinals made some moves, including getting Marquise Brown in the offseason. They got Zach Ertz at the trade deadline last year. And as you've talked about, and I would agree, there's a tremendous amount of pressure now that Kyler Murray has been extended for the Cardinals to now take another step this season. I don't know what that step you think is, but it has got to be better than what has happened the last couple of years.
I mean, I would actually say the Cardinals as an organization, Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury, DeAndre Hopkins, you know, pretty much up and down. I would say this is the organization that has the most pressure on them to succeed this year when you look at, you know, what they've spent on this roster, when you look at, you know, the cost of acquiring all these guys. Kyler Murray, for his career, 22, 23, and 1, right? That's not great, right? That, like, for a guy who has been put in the MVP conversation, for the guy who is as talented as he is, that's not great. This team is very conservative under the guidance of Cliff Kingsbury. You know, they are one of the least aggressive teams on going for it on fourth down, on punting too early, on kicking field goals when they should go for it. And you know, I'm really looking for Kyler to stay healthy for an entire regular season. I'm looking for Cliff Kingsbury to expand the way he calls plays on offense. You know, one of the big negatives about the Arizona Cardinals is so much of their offense is close to the line of scrimmage and moving horizontally instead of vertically. My hope is that the acquisition of Marquise Brown is going to signal a change of that direction, that they are going to be a more expansive passing offense, but a lot of that remains to be seen.
Yeah, it remains to be seen on the individual, too. It's been a brutal offseason with injuries and an arrest the other day, too, with him, too. The ADP for the Cardinals tells you that there's a lot of upside here, several players within the top 100, so that means a lot of players are getting drafted in the NFFC. You have Kyler Murray right around the fourth, fifth round at 58. You have James Conner, who's going 31 in fantasy football drafts. A ton of touchdowns for him last year. Darrell Williams, kind of an afterthought, but more of a handcuff. DeAndre Hopkins still being drafted in the top 100, as well as Marquise Brown. Naturally, you have Zach Ertz, who is a top 100 player, not the top two or three tight end taken, but the one player that did really emerge last season once he got traded. Kyler Murray found him early and often. And naturally, Rondell Moore, another player who I'm sure that if something was to happen to one of their key wide receivers, Moore would be better. But I thought watching Moore, he looked like an uber talented player that was just not being used enough. And I don't know if that's going to change this year.
Yeah, I mean, Rondale probably has the widest range of outcomes of any Arizona Cardinals player with an ADP right now. You know, it could be anything from he is kind of working in that short underneath area that DeAndre Hopkins was so successful in 2020. You know, DeAndre, I believe, led the NFL in receptions that season. And Rondale is clearly very capable of that. But obviously, you would want that tree to be expanded a little bit. Last season, Rondale Moore had the lowest average depth of target of any player in the NFL. It was under 2 yards, 2 yards from the line of scrimmage. The next closest was Cole Beasley, who was 4 yards better than Rondale. But of course, Rondale, you know, did have a couple electrifying moments and then kind of went to the bench. He scored that long touchdown in week 2 against the Minnesota Vikings and then basically disappeared. After that, he did have an 11 reception game against Seattle in week 11 of the NFL season. But the very annoying thing that ended up happening was his playing time actually went down as the season decreased, and the Arizona Cardinals were playing Antoine Wesley over him. Antoine Wesley, a 4-year player from Texas Tech, you know, just very much just a guy at the NFL level. The big question with Kyler Murray is, can he stay healthy while being an effective runner? Because obviously the running is why Kyler Murray is, you know, a top 50 pick in fantasy football. He's been a great rusher in his career, 554 yards, 4 rushing touchdowns as a rookie, 11 rushing touchdowns and 819 yards in 2020. And then the rushing really slowed down. Basically, when he came back from that injury last year, he was not running at all. And, I think to be effective at the NFL level, Kyler has to be running. So if you take that element away from his game, I do kind of wonder what this offense will look like.
Yeah, the top 5 quarterback in fantasy football, 24 touchdowns last season, ADP 58.7 in the NFFC. All right, so now let's dive into the running backs. Now, naturally, you know, Chase Edmonds was in Arizona last season, and look, he was okay. I mean, he didn't do what I think a lot of people thought he would, and I guess the primary reason for that is James Conner, anytime the ball was near the goal line, he was the guy that Arizona would give the ball to. He rushed for 752 yards. He added some receptions and certainly some yards too, but it was all touchdown dependent. And so he is a lightning rod conversation this season, Davis, because you go back and look, and this is probably before you were really playing fantasy football, but when Marcus Allen was with your Chiefs, every single time they got the ball in the one, Marcus Allen got the ball, and he was playable in fantasy football because he'd score 17 touchdowns on 500 yards. I don't know if James Conner is that guy, but that's kind of who he was a little bit last season. So is this sustainable?
I mean, it's pretty thin, right? Because for James Conner to pay off his average draft position, he really does have to do what he did last year. He scored 18 touchdowns, 3 receiving touchdowns, 15 rushing touchdowns on 202 carries. Now, you know, we do know that running backs get a huge boost playing with rushing quarterbacks, right? So like when there's a quarterback that I forget the exact math. I think it's quarterbacks that run over 5 times per game and average over 4.5 yards per carry. There's like a significant boost in per touch production for running backs. I mean, we've seen this with, you know, how about Mark Ingram's 2019 season with Lamar Jackson? Mm-hmm. Scores 15 touchdowns at 31 years old and, you know, is kind of bounced around teams since then. And James Conner last year really illustrated a great example of that. You know, kind of one of the issues with his profile is they did bring in Daryl Williams in free agency. Daryl Williams, of course, spent the last 4 years of his career being a thorn in the side of Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Damian Williams, a very competent third down back. I think for James Conner to really live up to where fantasy drafters are taking him right now, he needs to have a solid handle on that third down role, because even truly, even 15 touchdowns is not going to save his season if he only catches 25 passes, right? Because pass catching in full point PPR leagues, I mean, you know, that's three receptions for 30 yards. If you're not getting any of that work, it really impacts your fantasy totals. We've seen that with guys like Derrick Henry in the past, where when they don't score touchdowns, they're just not very useful fantasy players. All of that being said, I do think Connor is kind of one of the best bets to be a workhorse running back in fantasy drafts. He's going after some guys who are clearly in timeshares, right? Nick Chubb, total timeshare. Javonte Williams, mm-hmm. definitely in a timeshare. And I would imagine that James Conner is going to be at worst in like a 60-40. The thing that would crush him would be is if he does get hurt inside the season, I don't think he will be coming back to a full role. I think one of Eno Benjamin, Keontae Ingram, or Daryl Williams will step up in his absence.
Yeah, and that's the dynamic. The interesting part is that, look, we do see a lot of turnover at running back in the NFL, and we probably could go team by team. But it does feel like the Cardinals in particular, Davis, have a new starting running back every year. This is like the first time I can recall where a back-to-back season, they got a guy, you know, coming back. They've just run through so many different players, Kenyon Drake and Edmonds and some others, David Johnson. Everyone probably forgot that David Johnson was like the best running back in the NFL for a year. But now they have it, and it's Connor. We'll see if that proves dividends. We continue our preview of the Cardinals as we take a look at their wide receivers and tight ends. Coming up next right here on our 2022 fantasy football preview of the Arizona Cardinals next here on FOT.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back. Our preview of the Arizona Cardinals season continues here on Fantasy Sports Today. For those of you who are getting ready to draft in fantasy football, we're previewing one team each day all the way through the upcoming NFL season and right through your draft. And we archive all of our videos over on YouTube and also on sportsgrid.com. Yesterday, we covered the Falcons. We're covering the Cardinals today. One more time, let's show you the average draft position of the key players on the Cardinals. As it stands in the NFFC, it's James Conner, who is the highest at 31.5, Kyler Murray at 58.7, Marquise Brown at 65, Hopkins at 75, Zach Ertz, an eighth-round pick, and then Daryl Williams, more or less a handcuff at this point, at running back, if you want to call him that, to James Conner. Now let's take a look at the wide receivers going into the season. Now, naturally, Arizona, Davis, they have been trying to improve their wide receiver core. They took Andy Isabella a few years ago, hoping to get something out of him. They've mixed, they've matched, they've tried different players. And then this offseason, they went out and they did make a trade to try and upgrade this position with Marquise Brown. I guess the question is, for the first handful of games over the course of the season, does Murray have enough weapons without Hopkins being in tow? Because once he comes back, obviously we think we know who he is, but they've tried different guys, the AJ Greens, you know, he was okay. Wesley's the other name that you mentioned too. I just don't have a full feel as to whether or not they've just simply done enough to help here.
So I think it's sort of tricky, right? And a lot of it is definitely going to depend on one, Rondale Moore, who we're going to talk about in a second, but also, you know, what is DeAndre Hopkins going to look like when he returns from his suspension? Last season, you know, he played in 10 games and he clearly just, you know, was not the same dominant presence that he was in 2020. He had 160 targets, 115 receptions, 1,400 yards. He was phenomenal. And, you know, he did not have a single 100-yard game last year before he got injured. And really, the only reason he had any fantasy value at all was because he happened to score some touchdowns. You know, he had a couple multi-touchdown games. In fact, racked up 8 touchdowns in only 10 games played, which is a better rate, you know, a better touchdown per target rate than any other year of his career. Obviously, he spent a lot of that time with the Houston Texans, who even with Deshaun Watson were just, you know, not a very good team, didn't have a ton of complimentary pieces. And while DeAndre Hopkins is gone, you know, they're going to have to really ask 35-year-old Zach Ertz to do a ton. When DeAndre Hopkins was active for games, Zach Ertz had a 14% target share. When DeAndre Hopkins was out, Zach Ertz had a 23% target share. I am mostly avoiding DeAndre Hopkins at ADP because, just look, you take him, you are guaranteed 6-0. So you cannot start him those weeks. You know that. Then obviously the bye week is involved in there as well. He is also, you know, entering into his age 30 season. 30-year-old wide receivers, they tend to take a downturn in terms of efficiency. And if DeAndre Hopkins somehow gets banged up when he returns, he basically is one of the worst picks on the board. You know, so at that point, I maybe like him a little bit more in best ball where I just don't have to think about it and I'll just get his good weeks. But in managed leagues where you have to carry that zero for 6 weeks, it's a sort of a tough ask.
Yeah, I think it is based on the ADP too. The only good news is that if you have injuries, you would assume this guy is not and just comes back 100% healthy, but we will see. So a little bit of a surprise on draft night as Marquise Brown goes from the Ravens to the Cardinals. And Marquise Brown has been a hot topic in fantasy now for a couple of years because he shows that he can be a number one in the NFL. And he also shows that sometimes the routes are off and the balls are dropped and just a number of different things have happened with him. He did have over 1,000 yards last year and 6 touchdowns. And certainly there are some high expectations here. Most people in their season-long fantasy teams, it looks like Davis have them. If you're taking Brown, he's probably your wide receiver too in some spots. But I got to tell you, this has not been a smooth transition, at least for me, in seeing what's going on here. Obviously, he got a little banged up at the start of training camp. He's at an off-the-field thing already. And look, if while Hopkins is out, he can just simply throw all that away and be one of the best receivers in the NFL, my gosh, he's going to prove huge dividends on where he's being drafted. But the smell test thus far for me is not going like I thought it would.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, how many guys are like this in the NFL where their very best career game was their first game in the NFL? That is true for Marquise Dolphins, Brown. Right. His very first game against the Miami Dolphins, 4 receptions, 147 yards, 2 touchdowns. He has never topped those amount of yards in any game since. He has had one other 2 touchdown. Actually, he's had 3 other 2 touchdown games, which I guess is sort of indicative of the player he was. I also think one of the big things that's going to change for Marquise Brown is the Ravens were the most aggressive rushing team in the NFL. You know, no team even close to them in terms of their pass run splits. The Cardinals are one of the more pass heavy teams in the NFL because they sort of use the passing game as a substitution for, you know, kind of those ineffective 2nd and 8 runs. You know, they throw a lot of screens. And I guess, you know, what remains to be seen is who is Cliff Kingsbury going to designate as that short area wide receiver while DeAndre Hopkins is suspended? You know, when Hopkins returns, he is going to be that guy. He's going to be getting slants and screens like that. That is what he has been really effective at in his career. But is Rondale Moore going to be that guy? Or is Marquise Brown going to be that guy? You know, I can see the argument either way. The argument for Marquise Brown would be, well, you spent a great amount of draft capital to acquire him. You just paid him a bunch of money. You know, he is kind of the marquee acquisition, so you should be getting him the ball. Obviously, you know, Cliff and Steve Keim think that he's really good in order to go out and acquire him. Considering that, you know, A.J. Brown could have been acquired for a similar cost. Amari Cooper could have been acquired for a much lower cost. How good did the Browns look in that deal, and how dumb did the Cowboys look considering what A.J. Brown and Marquise Brown went for in trades? And you know, Kyler also does throw a great deep ball. Kind of, I guess what's sort of interesting about Kyler is he is not a great intermediate passer for a very simplistic reason. He cannot see that part of the field. You know, Kyler is 5'9", so he can see close to the line of scrimmage and he can see his dudes running, you know, 40 yards down the field, but he, you know, just kind of has a harder time throwing over the middle of the field, you know, 10, 15 yard routes. That's not his strong suit, which has also not been Marquise Brown's strong suit in the NFL either. He really was kind of just a deep threat in Baltimore because of how their offense worked. I do like Marquise Brown at cost. You know, I could actually see Marquise Brown, if this is a great season for the Cardinals, you know, they win 12 games, they win some of those tough divisional games that maybe in years past they would have lost, you know, just thinking in my head of all the gross Seattle, Arizona games I've watched over the years, right? But if they get some of those and he does well down the field and Hopkins turns into a complimentary wide receiver instead of the star wide receiver, I can totally see Marquise Brown, you know, being the 19th pick in fantasy drafts next year. So I do really like him, but I think he's definitely one of those guys that has a very wide range of outcomes.
Agreed, for sure. And again, Rondale Moore, first six games of the year, we're going to learn a lot more about him as well. So let's close out with the tight end talk. Davis, Zach Ertz was great with Arizona. I mean, all of these numbers that you're going to see here, 763 yards, 5 touchdowns. I'm not sure how many of these numbers were just Arizona games in the second half, but I'm going to guess 90% of his numbers were. PPR, wow, like he caught a ton of passes too. And I know he's getting older, and I know he's not going to be the same guy he was in Philly, but he instantly looked exactly like he was with Philadelphia down the stretch. Like he was Kyler's main target for a long time. I probably says more about what the Cardinals are doing than anything else. But he's being drafted essentially as the 9th best tight end in fantasy with an ADP of 93.7. And that feels like people are just expecting him to dip a little bit.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's a reasonable expectation because it's, again, you know, we're talking about so much uncertainty here. What role is Rondale Moore going to play? What role is Marquise Brown going to play? What's Hopkins going to look like when he comes back? Are they going to play Antoine Wesley? Are they going to find some snaps for Andy Isabella, right? They retained him on the roster. He has not been cut. He's a second-round pick. He makes, you know, second-round pick money. But Ertz does just feel very solid and dependable. You know, to end the season last year, 5 for 42, 6 for 74, 8 for 54, 7 for 41, 7 for 84. I mean, doesn't that just sound exactly like Zach Ertz? Like, that's just exactly what he's going to do for your team. I think, you know, one of the reasons why he would not be going, you know, tight end 6, tight end 7, is you really cannot tell yourself any story that Zach Ertz has a ton of upside, right? He's not going to score 10 touchdowns. He's not. I think it's very unlikely that he gets, you know, 1,000 yards or anything like that. So he's very solid and he's very dependable, but you're probably not going to win your fantasy league because you took Zach Ertz.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, so we hit on Rondale Moore as a possibility. Did we miss any other deep sleeper type players that are not in the top 200 that you've taken in a best ball that you think play a factor? There's going to be some on every team. Are there any on the Cardinals?
I mean, I do. I think Rondale is a pretty good pick, especially in managed leagues, because I don't really see a way he doesn't play at least 50% of the snaps to start the year. Now, maybe he sucks, right? So maybe they get Rondale in there. He plays really poorly. DeAndre Hopkins comes back from suspension and he plays the same role he did last year. Or on the converse, he could be really good and their 3 wide receiver set just pretty much every down is Rondale, Marquise Brown, DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, that sounds pretty fearsome to me, right? If Rondale is playing well, like that sounds like a really good offense. And if he's bad and you know he's going to the bench when Hopkins comes back, you can just cut him, right? And I kind of like drafting guys like that, where guys you just know if you can cut him. Same like taking Gronk with the last pick of your draft, right? Gronk doesn't come back. It's week one. You need to pick up a kicker. You cut Gronk, right? Like I like having binary decisions like that.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. By the way, the 2 running backs you mentioned, I think Eno Benjamin was one, and there was another. Who was the other one that you mentioned?
Keontae Ingram. He was a 4th-round pick out of the University of Texas. He's fine. You know, like he's not a great player or anything, but I do think he'll make the team.
Okay, so there you go. That's our Cardinals preview here for 2022. We'll continue our previews back here on Monday's edition of the show, so hopefully you can tune in and catch our next preview of our next NFL team that's on deck. We'll take a quick time out here on the show. We got fantasy reality coming up next, so stay on the grid. Be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. You want to make sure you're following us on Twitter at Sports Grid and at Sports Grid TV for the latest news, notes, information, of course, picks against the spread, as well as the content that we're providing you, which includes everything happening in Major League Baseball and, Davis, naturally, everything happening in the NFL preseason. And what are we, like, 4 days away from, like, having preseason games almost every single day? I feel like the NFL is, like, really stretching these games out over the course of the NFL preseason.
Yeah, I want to say that was a collective bargaining change 2 years ago when they did the CBA. So they changed it from doing all the preseason games on one day, right? I think it used to be Saturdays where they would do it all, to now they kind of space them out Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think they even do, am I remembering a Monday Night Football preseason game last year? You know, they did. Yeah. So it's look, it gets ratings. People love it. I mean, we make fun of the crappy football. I would bet if we look up, you know, the Nielsen ratings for yesterday's craptastic Jaguars Raiders game, it probably beat one of the games of the Stanley Cup Finals, right? I bet if I went in there with the microscope, I could say, oh, you know, Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Finals had fewer viewers than watched the Hall of Fame game, which is a sad reflection of our attention span. But I mean, people just love football.
Yeah, we have two games coming up on the 11th. The Giants play the Patriots and the Titans play the Ravens. And then we have 5 games on the 12th, which is 1 week from tonight. So that's Friday. So two games on Thursday, 5 games on Friday, and then the rest of the games on Saturday. I believe there's a game Sunday night too. So we'll be hit with that a ton next week as week one. I think we'd call this week zero. But week one of the NFL preseason next week. All right, time for us to touch on some other topics, including Major League Baseball. So let's do some fantasy or reality. All right, Davis, around baseball, what happens this time of year is players are attempted to be traded at the trading deadline. And then once they're not, if they can't move them, teams then have to decide what to do because there is no other second trade deadline like we used to have at the end of August, the waiver trade deadline where you have to pass through waivers. That's gone. So the only other way to make a trade is to designate players for assignment. Yesterday, we saw a couple of those players, Boston Red Sox DFAing Jackie Bradley Jr. and the Philadelphia Phillies designating D.D. Gregorius for assignment as well. Now, Davis, looking at D.D. Gregorius, this was a very capable player who's still under 32, who's still 32 years old, which is not ancient in baseball, that's for sure. But my gosh, his numbers like fell apart this year. So I'm not really exactly sure what is going on. But clearly the Yankees have a need at shortstop for their future, although they do have a kid in the minors named Anthony Volpe, who I believe will start for them next year. But how about for the rest of this year? Fantasy reality, the Yankees should bring back D.D. Gregorius.
I think that it's probably a reality. The first one being that if I was a Major League Baseball general manager, I would always want to have left-handed bats on the bench that could play multiple positions. Now, Gregorius is not a great defensive player, right? I mean, that was kind of just one of the things with the Phillies in general, is their defense is not great. But you can play him at shortstop. You can play him at second base. He has had decent power in the past. I mean, 13 home runs last year, 10 home runs the year before. This is actually true. D.D. Gregorius has received MVP votes before. I don't even know how that happened, but that is a world that we live in. But I mean, I definitely think that I would, if I was a team that wanted to win the World Series, just having lefty guys on your bench. I mean, we talked about this yesterday, right? Like the idea that a left-handed starter can come in and face 9 right-handed batters. Well, you'd want to do the same thing to a right-handed starting pitcher, right? You don't want to give a right-handed starting pitcher 9 righties to face. You want to be able to do some changes. You want to have the platoon advantage in the late innings, right? You know, so I'm totally with this. As a 25th guy, as your utility middle infielder, I have certainly seen worse utility middle infielders than D.D. Gregorius in my day.
Yeah, it's interesting because he has the perfect swing for that park in right field, but yes, he was there previously and they did let him go. Joey Gallo had the perfect swing for that park too, and they let him go too. I'm going to take the other side here. I'm going to say fantasy. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has done a nice job for them. Let's be honest. He's not going to be the primary shortstop on this team for much longer. The kid they have in the minors is going to be, they actually have two infielders in the minors who could take over at some point, either next year or beyond. But whenever something like this happens, you look at the player and you wonder if they have anything left. And I think Didi's probably going to go to a place, maybe a more low-key place, to rebuild some of his value so he could go back on the free agency market again. And for him personally, while the Yankees is a great spot and the Dodgers is a great spot and the Astros are a great spot, you know, he's got to play every day to get a free agent contract next year. He's going to have a really hard time getting more than like a 1 year, $2 million guaranteed, something along those lines. I am curious where he ends up, but I don't think it will be the Yankees. So I will say fantasy, Didi ends up in a more low-key spot where he can help himself as opposed to maybe a team win a World Series. But again, we'll see what happens. We'll find out in the next couple of days. All right, some of the talk during the New England Patriots offseason has been their offense again. Bill Belichick, funnily enough, said that he doesn't care about fantasy football. We know that we do here, Davis, but naturally, the Patriots had a really good season last year, but there did come a point where obviously other teams were watching their film because, my gosh, their offense went into a shell in the second half of the season and they were completely blown out in the playoffs. They did make some upgrades in the offseason. They added Devontae Parker. They like this rookie that they've drafted as well at wide receiver, and they're going to roll Mac Jones and those two running backs out there and tight ends again. But I guess we could ask the question, fantasy or reality, you are concerned about the Patriots' offense?
100% reality. I am very concerned. So I did go back in history to go look this up, honestly, more out of curiosity than anything else. But, you know, McDaniels has left the Patriots before. This is not the first time that he has left the organization. And so I went back to go look, okay, what happened the last time that McDaniels left? And actually, funnily enough, the exact same thing happened where the team did not have a nominal offensive coordinator the first year that Josh McDaniels left. So I believe it was 2010. He leaves the team and they had a combination of guys. Bill O'Brien was one of them. I forget the names of some of the, I mean, this is literally like 15 years ago in the NFL, but they had a committee of guys involved in calling the plays on offense. And, it worked out fine for them. I don't remember if they won the Super Bowl that year or not. Probably they did because it's the Patriots and that's kind of what they do. Yeah. And then Bill O'Brien was the offensive coordinator for them the year before. However, pretty big difference going from one Mr. Tom Brady to Mac Jones. Now, Mac Jones was a good rookie. He was efficient, got the ball out. The Patriots were, you know, a fine offense last year. But big difference between having Brady be the signal caller and Mac Jones be the signal caller. And I would also argue that Matt Patricia and Joe Judge are sort of a worse caliber of Patriots assistant coach than they've had in the past. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm so colored by how poorly these guys did as a head coach, and they'll actually be a little bit better than that. But I am definitely a little bit worried. Honestly, one of the big reasons I'm worried about the Patriots offense, though, is they just have no one who's fast, right? They have Tyquan Thornton and they have Jonnu Smith, but both of those guys are going to be bit players. I don't think they're going to have full-time roles. So I'm just worried about a slow offense being coached by Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. Does not seem like a good recipe to me.
Yeah, I got reality too. I can't go any way on this. By the way, Matt Patricia's back with the Patriots. I didn't even know that. When did that happen?
I think this offseason. I can't remember. I can't remember if he got fired last year or the year before. But yeah. So yeah, I think he would have been on the staff last year.
Yeah, I didn't even know. From the Lions, right? He got fired from the Lions? Yeah, I didn't even know that he was back there. Okay, so yeah, I got reality too. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know that it has much to do with McDaniels. I mean, I think Bill Belichick is just so archaic in the way that he likes to run his offense. And he's one of those guys that wants to prove you wrong, that wants to show you that he can still do things the way that he wants to do it. They have two really good running backs there in Stevenson and Harris, and I expect it to just be ground and pound with that defense. So from fantasy, from reality, Patriots are still going to be right around 500, maybe a little bit above 10-7. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's possible. Their defense is fantastic, and Belichick is probably the best defensive coach in the NFL still. So yes, I am concerned, and I don't know that Mac Jones is going to replicate what he did in the first half of last year either. So I will say reality on the Patriots offense, no doubt. All right, finally, this is a book that is now being made into a movie, and Keanu Reeves is going to star in this. I don't have a ton of familiarity here, Davis, but it is called Devil in the White City, and I believe this is going to be on Hulu, if I'm not mistaken. So I would ask you, hopefully you have some context here, fantasy reality, will watch Devil in the White City.
Well, I will probably watch anything that has Keanu Reeves in it. He is the absolute best, right? I mean, the John Wick movies, amazing. The Matrix movies, amazing. Speed, amazing. He's just a great actor. He is also a great guy. Like, you know, all the stories you hear about Keanu Reeves are like just him being a great dude to all the people around him. So the story of Devil in the White City is pretty interesting. It is, it's about the city of Chicago in the 1800s, and then a little bit in Philadelphia. It's the true story of the 1893 World's Fair, which is kind of viewed as one of these big nation-changing events, mm-hmm. but also this very interesting story. I don't know if you do the true crime thing. We actually have not talked about this at all on the show before. You know, true crime podcasts are like this whole genre of entertainment. Mm-hmm. And the story that is told in this book about H.H. Holmes, who is a serial killer. He had this big mansion in downtown Chicago that basically was like he just murdered people in it. It was a house built to commit murders in. And it's actually like a really fascinating story if there's any of it. So I think I got reality. I think I will probably watch this.
Yeah, and again, Keanu Reeves does not do bad things, like, as far as movies are concerned. In general, like, he's one of those actors where if he's in it, you expect it to be good. Tom Hanks, I think, falls in that category, too, and some others. So I will say reality. This sounds very interesting to me, and I think that I will check it out. And I'm not sure if I have Hulu or not. I'll have to see. I think I may have it, but it's just another Dave. It's one of these three. I can't keep up with all of these streaming options, man. Like, sometimes, like, I have to literally go to the Fire Stick and click to see if I even have it or not. I don't even remember.
Yeah. I mean, I know I pretty much have access to all of them, either paying for them, or some of these you get, you know, complimentary access to if you have, like, a mobile carrier. Like, you get if you have what used to be AT&T is now T-Mobile, you get HBO Max. You can get a free year of Apple Plus in like a couple different ways if you have, or not, yes. AT&T, Sprint or T-Mobile. So I got a free year of that. And then, you know, if you have a cable login or like a U-verse, which is kind of like an a la carte type option, I think YouTube TV does it as well. You get access to some of these. The only one that I ever hear about people canceling these days is canceling their Netflix subscription, because Netflix has gone to, you know, all original programming. Right. And some people just don't care. Some people just want to watch reruns of The Office for the 900th time. And they raised the price of Netflix. So sort of interesting stuff there. Although everyone did re-up, obviously, for Stranger Things.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely watch that. No question. All right. We got to take one final time out here on the show. When we come back next, it's time for the Sports Grid 60. And then we will send it over to Kevin and Donnie coming up at the top of the hour. So stay on the grid for that. And then, of course, I'll be back with you at 2 o'clock Eastern for Newswire right here on Sports Grid. So don't go away as we continue on here on this Friday afternoon. Hopefully you will stick with us as we wrap it up with the Sports Grid 60 next right here on Fantasy Sports Today. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Our fantasy previews in the NFL will continue on Monday, but we're going to wrap up our show here on this Friday. And here to deliver the Sports Grid 60 as we get out of here is Davis Maddock.
You know, Craig, I am just I'm just so glad that this is the part of the season where we're at. For me, this is the best part of the season. I know a lot, like, you know, it's just so easy to be optimistic right now. You know, we look at this awful Falcons roster and we're like, oh, you know, Kyle Pitts, he could be a generational talent. Cordarrelle Patterson, he's kind of fun. You know, that we got guys in the best shape of their lives. No one's really injured yet. You know, Tim Patrick unfortunately did tear his ACL, but you know, every team is mostly fully healthy right now. You're doing all these drafts, you're looking at your team and you're seeing, oh, this could be so good. I could win my, you know, I'm going to score so many points. Like this is, to me, I'm just kind of trying to take a moment and enjoy it, because obviously when the season starts, that's really when things start to go south. You know, when you start out 0-3 in your fantasy league and you're like, great, why do I even do this?
Yeah, that's definitely coming for a lot of people. You know what else is coming to town? It's the traveling All-Stars. Have we ever seen a team like this before that was not named the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Red Sox? I mean, the San Diego Padres are the must-watch team in Major League Baseball right now. Not the Angels with Ohtani and Trout. It is the San Diego Padres. Wherever they go, they're going to sell out. It's almost like watching, what, 6-7 All-Stars at once, and great pitchers and great hitters. And not even the biggest market in baseball either. It's just kind of strange that San Diego has become must-see TV, especially with Fernando Tatis Jr. due back soon. So they do visit Miami coming up soon too. So I definitely will have my first view of what that looks like coming up as well. That'll do it for our show today. Thanks for Andrew filling in today and producing the program. Of course, thanks to LTN and our fantastic graphics department. Also, I want to thank my co-host, Davis Maddock. I'm Craig Mish. That will do it for our week of shows today. Make sure you're back here on Monday as we continue our season fantasy football previews team by team. Until then, hope you have a great weekend. See you then, everybody.